Hello, and welcome to a free preview of Greatest of All Talk. Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Greatest of All Talk. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, ready for the playoff crucible, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I got my first taste of it, actually, in Sacramento. Well, again, not the playoff crucible, the postseason crucible, the play-in right? tournament crucible. Got to be real careful with the vernacular. But when I was growing up, I feel like I read a lot of boxing books just because there were a lot of boxing books, you know. Baseball and boxing felt like that's what the Beaverton City Library really loaded up on.
Great.
And I think it's a shared sentiment within the boxing books and boxing movies about like the aging heavyweight who's just taken too many blows and doesn't know when to quit and can't say no more, I've had enough, and actually retire. Like, that's one of the oldest tropes in sports, right?
Sure.
And you get where I'm going with this. I mean, the freaking Gold State Warriors just bloodied and battered and delusional in their post-game press conferences. It was a wild scene. I was having flashbacks to reading these books when I was like 8 years old and saying, man, this is what they meant. They're really going to come up here and say, oh, yeah, we can still do it. We can still win a title. Klay Thompson just has to shoot better than 0 for 10 and not hit a single shot all night. And Draymond just has to not punch anybody for like 7 months straight. Maybe we can get through it. Steph only has to face four defenders simultaneously. You know, if he has to face all five, it's a little bit too much. But we can look forward to this brighter future where we have somebody else who could dribble. And Steph isn't stuck going 1-on-5 every single night. It's just sad scenes, man. Really tough scenes. I'm sure we could dive into it later, and I definitely want to give Sacramento their props for just drop-kicking the Warriors in every possible way across that game. But that was the lingering sensation coming out. Like you said, watching the Warriors lose was sad. Brilliant call, and I actually think it was worse than that. Like it was troubling. I wanted to step in, like, stop the fight. Like, get these guys, you know, back to the safety of a hospital or something, because it was brutal to watch, man. Just absolutely brutal. And even worse to listen to, because their takes on what had happened were awful. It's like,
hard. They look like the same people. They still carry themselves like champions, like the best team in the league, and yet the results are the results, and they speak for themselves. Do you think Steph can still be the best player on a championship team?
It's a great question. Real quick, I mean, yes, like their rationalization was wild. It's like, oh, if we had just won six games that we blew during the regular season, then we would have been in the playoffs. It would have been fine.
And they did blow a lot of close games. I mean, Steve Kerr has some blood on his hands. There's no question about that. But again, it's the same story we've heard, you know, several years now. Every year except for 2022, it's been this same story where there's uneven results throughout the season and a lot of inconsistency, a lot of sloppy turnovers. This is why it's so frustrating and painful. It's like just reliving the same drama over and over again.
But this one was worse because they barely kept it under 40 against the Sacramento Kings, who didn't have two of their rotation players. Keegan Murray is looking like a Hall of Famer out there, right?
Keon Ellis too, man.
Oh, Keon Ellis is incredible and probably the most underrated single player on this show all season long, and just had a great game, had a great stretch run. But Fox walking in any shot that he wants, you know, even Sabonis having a terrible game but still getting numbers because the Warriors can't do anything about him. Just, it was so un-Warriors-like on offense. It was so un-Warriors-like on defense. It was just really sad, and they came out of it talking like it was still 2019, you know, and it was brutal to listen to. And obviously they face a lot of choices, you know, are they going to be able to bring these guys back or not? Like, how do you, you know, work things out when the payroll's as crazy as it is? They are just in this very, very depressing space. And I think it was actually good they got put down early, you know, like, maybe this shakes them out of it. Maybe the dust settles and they realize they have absolutely no chance of making it through a 2-month gauntlet. They got blown off the court by the West's 9th best team, which was shorthanded, right? Like, maybe that will help them to see things more clearly. And, you know, Steph made the comment, like, I don't even know if I want to watch the playoffs. We got plenty of time to change your mind, man. And in terms of if he could be the best player on a championship team, I would say yes, in theory. I just don't think so in practice, at least not in Golden State. There's just so many things need to change. So many things need to be retooled. They missed on so many draft picks along the way. And their young players are the best part of this season, like the best story. But they're not guys who are really going to be, you know, capable of like major finals minutes in the next 2 to 3 years during Steph's window to be that type of player, right? And so I do think there was probably a little bit of a correction on his value. I think he ran out of gas down the stretch of this season. Obviously, you know, carrying a massive burden. I loved his accountability after the game, saying, "That's what they pay me for." He's not whining about the triple teams. You know, he's not whining about the quadruple teams. He's just saying, "Yeah, that's my job. So, you know, judge me on how I performed." And it was a B minus in the biggest game this season. It wasn't 50 points in game 7 to send the Kings home. It looked a little bit more like that Lakers series where he just couldn't find answers, couldn't find counters, couldn't consistently get himself open. So I do think there's going to be a correction on Steph's perception heading into next season. I think he's going to get passed by some of these younger guys on, like, you know, the top 100 lists. And I do think that there will be less national expectations of the Warriors to be a serious playoff threat basically forever going forward. You know, it's like maybe people will talk themselves into it, like they like to talk themselves into this Lakers idea, just kind of stir things up. But, you know, to me, whether or not the dynasty core dies here and Klay goes off and signs somewhere else, like the actual possibility of extending this run, dead and gone. You know, Sacramento Kings, you're standing on the grave. You did it.
The Kings stood on business on Tuesday night in Sacramento. I was about to call it Arco. I don't know what it's called these days, but yes.
They have a banner in their rafters. Well, it's crazy because they don't have any banners because they haven't won anything.
I think
they have one championship banner from Rochester. I think it's like the 1950s or something. And then they have a banner that says Arco Arena and the years that they played in Arco.
Remember when? Yeah, great.
Yeah,
it's solid kinda, banner.
Kind of cool.
I respect it. I can't be mad at it. Yeah, the reason I asked the question on Steph is because it came up in my basketball group chat earlier this week, and it is an open question going forward. I mean, I think in terms of him being the best player on a championship team.
Well, what's the case for it?
Well, the case for it is the burden that he's dealing with this Warriors roster is underappreciated and reminds me not only of last year's Lakers series, but it reminds me of that Raptors finals when the Warriors were just dropping like flies, and then it was Steph and a bunch of guys who weren't good enough to create offense on their own and actually put pressure on the defense. And so eventually the Raptors are just ganging up on Steph and making him look mortal for the first time in several seasons at that point. And if we go back to 2019, obviously, a couple years later, he was the best player on a championship team. So I think there's still that version of the cautionary tale as far as writing Steph off based on what we've seen this season and last season. He's just out there without much help. And you look at guys like Klay, it's just Klay was the one who was hardest to watch during that Kings game, but Kuminga wasn't much better. Wiggins has been a disaster all year long, and so there just aren't scorers. There aren't threats around Steph right now, and if you put a credible number two scorer alongside him, the story might be different, but it might not be, because the reality is we did see Steph wear down as the season unfolded. And the turnovers are a real problem. And this is what getting older looks like. And so that's the thing. I think we become inured to like the effects of aging because of LeBron. But this is actually normal for guys hitting their mid-30s. And that could be what the story looks like for Steph over the next couple of years, where he's still really good and still somebody who is delightful to watch throughout the regular season, but isn't necessarily going to be competing for titles for the rest of his career. And again, that's normal for all great athletes.
So sort of like Kevin Durant, maybe, is what you're describing?
A little bit. I was sort of imagining Dirk during the twilight in Dallas. I think that could be what's in store for the Warriors over the next couple of years. And that's fine.
Look, We've seen LeBron age too. I mean, he gassed out against the Nuggets in last year's Western Conference Finals in his fourth quarter against the Pelicans. Man, he needs to be thanking the injury gods that Zion went down, because yeah, LeBron was having a tough, tough time in the fourth quarter, basically doing anything. I think he hit that one turnaround jumper to kind of salvage it near the end. That was a big shot, because he was having a really tough time, looked exhausted, was not finishing his layups, no lift around the basket area. And I think it's going to be a huge thing to watch in this Nuggets versus Lakers first round series. It's not a coincidence that the Nuggets pull away in the fourth quarter game after game against the Lakers. Like, it's happened throughout the Western Conference Finals and all regular season long. LeBron's legs catch up to him, and you know the Lakers don't have enough supporting pieces, or haven't had enough to be able to pull out those late wins. So yeah, I think it's Steph's on trend, LeBron's on trend. It does feel like kind of a natural baton being passed. I mean, the Kings were the tougher team, the younger team, the quicker team, the smarter team. Like, just go down every kind of attribute that you would think about between the Kings and the Warriors, and the Kings check the box. And yeah, so that's why it's kind of a crisis moment for the Warriors. In terms of their decision with Klay Thompson, which I think is kind of the headliner, I think it's got to be viewed as a crossroads between loyalty and winning, right? Like, they were trying to have it both ways in their post-game press conference, clinging to the past. Steph was adamant that he wants to win, but also that he can't imagine himself playing without Klay and without Draymond next to him, right? And that's fine. You can be loyal, right? You can bring these guys back, but you're going to have to make that kind of, and maybe athletes won't, but we all should acknowledge that if they're going to stay loyal and bring this core back, they're not going to be in the mix, right? If you mm-hmm. do want to have a chance to win and win big and get that fifth championship, or one for the thumb, as Klay Thompson called it, yeah, Klay's not going to be part of that mix, in my opinion, right? Like, you just can't afford to pay him. You can't give him any sort of a premium based on goodwill or sentimentality, because you already have a huge contract for Steph, and because Klay just cannot perform at that level anymore consistently, right? Like, he had a good shooting season by the end of it, but it was real up and down. I think his best role right now, it's kind of as a super sub, like in an ideal world, you know, like, I wouldn't be paying him if I was a rival team to come and start for me, right? Because I just, you know, he's in his mid-30s as well. So that's why it's kind of loyalty or winning. And there's no guarantee. If you do break up the core and get rid of Klay and try to pivot and go elsewhere and cut Chris Paul's salary and maybe try to trade Wiggins and really overhaul things, you still have a lot of minutes to fill, and you still don't have very many other good players who are ready and experienced and capable enough of winning at a high level. So the easiest path here for Golden State is to move on from Chris, to explore Wiggins trades and maybe just give him away, and to bring back Klay on a much lower number and just sell, you know, the big three riding off into the sunset vision. And if that's what they do, they won't be contending next year. Yeah. And so they, you know, and maybe they just, you know, ownership concludes it's better to dance with the girls that brung you and just settle for wherever that lands. But they just can't have it both ways. And they were trying so hard to have it both ways. Oh, Steve Kerr says, I believe in these three guys. They're still really great players. They could do it. What are you talking about? Do we watch the same game?
That's true. And yet, had they gotten a win in Sacramento, I would be confident in their ability to beat a Zion-less Pelicans team on Friday, and then I would be confident in their ability to push OKC in the first round. I know it's delusional. The idea of the Warriors is still powerful and will continue to be powerful over the next couple of years as long as Steph and Draymond are there. I think Klay is entering a different phase of his career, clearly. And frankly, it was clear last year. During last year's Lakers series, Klay was a mess. And a lot of that story continued this year, certainly continued on Tuesday night.
Let me put you in Mike Dunleavy Jr.'s position, okay? Your options are pay Klay a reduced rate, bring him back, sell this big three deal, or rip the Band-Aid off, let him go, save the salary, and then you're getting everybody to think kind of future-focused instead of past-focused, right? Because these guys are living in their own shadow. Which of those paths would you prefer? And again, there's no guarantee that if you lose Klay, you're going to have somebody great to plug into his spot. And like,
right,
you've got big salary cap commitments to other players, but the fundamental question to me seems like, are the Warriors ready for the breakup, or are they just stuck? You know, are they just going to live in an unhappy marriage? Klay doesn't seem particularly happy. I mean, his chin was in his chest as he walked off the court, right? Like, he was real snappy in his post-season exit interview, kind of going after some of the writers for asking him about his future, and just real defensive and, you know, just kind of edgy. You know, It's like he doesn't seem super thrilled. He didn't get his extension, and clearly his pride was a factor in how he was playing this season, feeling like he should have been taken care of like the other guys were, right? So, is there a group benefit, a team dynamic benefit to just moving on and saying, hey, great times, this doesn't have to last forever, let's just try something different? Would you do it if you were a Mike Dunleavy Jr.?
Yes, I do think that that's going to be healthiest for everyone. I would be remiss if I didn't read Bob Myers. Klay will stay if he feels
Okay. Hold on. This is the Bob Myers who used to be the general manager of the Golden State Warriors?
That's right. This is why the foremost analyst on this front. He knows this situation better than anybody, so he'll have the best insight as far as I'm concerned.
And this is Bob Myers, who's a broadcaster for the biggest sports television network in the world.
Correct.
And on their high-profile pregame show, Bob Myers.
My favorite announcer, my favorite analyst, absolutely.
So he's getting teed up here to have the greatest take of his life. Is that right? Because this is his sweet spot. He knows every single person. He knows the boss who cuts the checks. He knows the player because he signed the players the checks. He gave Klay Thompson his last contract. He has all these rings on his finger, thanks in part to Klay Thompson and the ownership group and everything else. He knows how Steve Kerr thinks inside and out.
Correct.
He knows Steph Curry better than any other media member possibly could ever know Steph Curry. These are the principles on this decision, right?
Correct.
And you're going to read me for free on TV his analysis? All right, let's do it. What's he going to say?
Okay, so earlier this week, Bob Myers says, Klay will stay if he feels like he's been appreciated and paid what is appropriate. But if he's not, that's the question. It's always kind of a pride component because it's not money. People will say, well, Klay Thompson has made all this money. Fine. But you know what? There's a pride component to it for any professional athlete. So it's not just the money. He doesn't need any more money for the rest of his life. That's not the point, though. If somebody comes along and doubles the Warriors' offer, things might change. So, Ben, you may not have considered that Klay Thompson, if he gets twice the money on the open market that the Warriors are offering, will go elsewhere, and that there is a pride component to all of this with Klay Thompson, who has made that abundantly clear over the last 2 years as far as his public comments on the matter. Going to happen, clearly.
He said, it's not the money, like, three times.
Yeah.
And then pay me double and I'm gone?
Does sound like it might be the money for Klay Thompson, yeah. The money certainly equates to pride for Klay. And look, he's made the Warriors
confusing.
A lot of money over the years. The Warriors also paid him on a max deal throughout his rehab, and he didn't rehab as well as the Warriors wanted to, as well as the Warriors wanted him to, if you listen to some people out in Golden State. So, I don't know, man. We will circle back to the Warriors at the end of this episode, but it was
quick,
an emotional scene as all of that kind of crumbled on Tuesday night.
It was. In defense of Klay, he made a really good point, I thought, in his end-of-season press conference, which was, can you imagine if the Warriors hadn't paid me after the knee injury? And he's right. Like, he had all the leverage, even though he was injured and even though there was questions about what his game was going to look like in the future, coming off five straight finals trips, all these championships, you know, the goodwill kind of, you know, Klay's game was essentially peaking at that point where he got injured, right? And he goes out there and tries to, you know, keep playing through the injury, and he's gutsy and he's like, you know, this folk hero for this organization. Like, they did have to pay him.
Yeah.
He's 100% right, but they don't have to pay him this time. And that was the part that was left unsaid by Klay. And I would think really hard about not paying him this time. And that shouldn't lead to bad blood. If Klay can understand that this is a business in 2019, and even though he's going to miss an entire year with an injury, they're still going to pay him full freight. He can understand that if he goes 0-for-10 in the biggest game of the season and he's up and down all year long and he can't guard even close to how he used to guard, he has to understand it's a business too, right? And he can't just, I understand pride will be a factor, but like, you got to be able to step back a little bit and understand that you just don't get major, major contracts forever, no questions asked, unless you're Steph Curry. And
well, look,
that's the tough part. He's not.
He got hurt. And then there were questions about how he was rehabbing. And then he got hurt again and missed another season. And then he came back and was, he had his moments during that championship run and was very important during the finals. And he earned that money with that title. I would also say that I'm grateful that Otto Porter Jr. showed up for the Warriors and helped Steph get his fourth title, helped cement that legacy for Steph Curry. Now, I don't know. I think I was more of an Otto Porter Jr. title than Andrew Wiggins. But yeah, we will circle back to the Warriors at the end of the show. For now, we have the actual playoffs, which will not involve the Warriors, much to all of our dismay. A reminder to everybody.
Or relief.
Well, yes. I don't know.
Are you with me on that?
It would have been fun to watch them against the Thunder. More fun than watching the Kings get run off the floor or the Pelicans without Zion get run off the floor. But yeah, I think at this point I have seen enough of this sort of dying, punched out boxer version of the Warriors.
Yeah.
And so we'll be okay.
No, I got scared straight, man. Like, I went in there being like, yeah, let's get the Warriors, like, let's get a Warriors-Lakers play-in game on Friday. That would be awesome. Like, let's get the Warriors and Lakers both into the playoffs. This would be so much fun. Like, one more time for the old guys. And I was scared straight by the end of it. I was like, please let these guys go on vacation. Let me go on vacation from them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and I hardly even went to any Warriors games this year, just the ones that they were in LA. And then, you know, obviously this play-in game, but it was more than enough. I think it's healthy that they won't be in the playoffs. And I really want to set the record straight. The Thunder would have smacked them. The Thunder are such a cohesive team. They're more talented than the Sacramento Kings, in my opinion. I think the Thunder would have just laid the work to them, and it would have been even, you know, tougher to swallow because the Thunder guys are, you know, 22 years old, and so it would have just been even rougher. You would have looked older and slower and less imposing.
They played close games during the season, but look, I'm not here to stand out for the Warriors. I agree that the Thunder would have won the series, and I like where your head's at. You know, one night in Sacramento, and you're saying, give me Keon Ellis. I'm all set on Steph Curry at this point. And hey, more Keon Ellis, more fun for everybody. For now, as we dive into the actual playoffs, you can join the Greatest of All Talk Bracketology group by going to the link at the top of your show notes. The winner will get a t-shirt or a hoodie, free t-shirt, free hoodie, and you have until Saturday afternoon to get your bracket in, so make it happen. Great Friday activity. Spend 45 minutes poring over the brackets, making picks that you will instantly regret by the end of the weekend. But as far as the playoffs are concerned, let's dive in. I caught playoff fever watching the Sixers and Heat slug it out on Wednesday night in Philadelphia. Did you have any takeaways from that game? It was a classic Eastern Conference brawl. Both teams disgusted me at various points on Wednesday night. Do you have any takes as we head into now Knicks Sixers?
Bing bong, bing bong. That's my take.
You're a believer, huh?
I think the Knicks are going to take care of the Sixers, that version that I watched against the Miami Heat.
All right, and that is the end of the free preview. If you'd like to hear the rest of this episode and get two episodes every week from me, Andrew Sharp, and Ben Golliver, you can go to greatestofalltalk.com and subscribe to the show.